the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. And today we're thrilled to have a very special guest from out of state with us, Dr. Larry Steckel from University of Tennessee. And Larry, you're located in Jackson?
Yeah, not too far from y'all. But Jackson, Tennessee.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do for those guys that might not know exactly that you are hell-bent with the Twitter on getting information out there about resistant weeds.
Oh, appreciate that, Bobby, and thank you all for inviting me. I listen to you and Jason pretty frequently, so it's kind of an honor to be on here. But
I don't know if honor is the right word.
Well, it's been a long time coming. You should have already been on here by now.
Yeah, you're way too busy, man. So, well, yeah. So tell. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Tell us who you are.
Sure, I'm Larry Steckel. So I got a mostly extension research appointment at the University of Tennessee over here, located at Jackson. So our research station here at Jackson in West Tennessee. So been on, 17 years now. I don't know where the time's gone, but I've been there, been here this long.
And of course, you know, we work closely with Larry, on a lot of projects off and on over the years. And of course, you've taught me a lot of things, you know, the way to do weed science research. So I've always appreciated, you kind of steering me in positive directions for work. So, well, let's just jump right into it, Larry. We got a problem with some palmer amaranth in Tennessee. So why don't you just give us some background on that and let folks know what's going on?
Sure, Jason. So just kind of back up just a little bit. I don't know how many folks are aware of it, but about 2 years ago, K-State identified dicamba and 2,4-D resistant palmer amaranth on a research station at K-State. So, and it was located on a real long-term conservation program they were doing. Where basically, I think they were just basically burning down with Roundup and 2,4-D starting out every year. And that really had me raise an eyebrow because that basically describes Tennessee agriculture. Now, don't get me wrong, what little bit of delta we got, Arkansas's got most of our delta because the river came this far east, but what little bit of delta we got, we farm like y'all do. But most of what we got are these rolling hills here in West Tennessee and Middle Tennessee, and we are a no-till state. We're a proud no-till state. And just getting back to, they used Roundup 2,4-D on that long-term study at K-State and developed resistance to both palmer resistance to both 2,4-D and dicamba. And so in Tennessee, ever since Mayor's Tail came out and Roundup would no longer control it, we've been using Roundup and dicamba on virtually every acre, cotton, corn, soybeans, grain sorghum even, across the state since 2001. I kind of thought, well, if that's what's driving it on a little spot in Kansas, what are we going to do on 3 million plus acres? Just right off the get-go, I kind of thought, if we're going to have dicamba resistance, Tennessee's going to be one of the first states.
So, Larry, you're talking about those applications for horseweed, mare's tail. So what kind of timing are we referring to there?
So most of those would be corn. A lot of the corn would be put on in March, some in April. The corn planter following pretty shortly behind. At that timing, it's not a lot of selection pressure on that low-rated dicamba on palmer because we don't have a lot up yet. But a big part of the cotton and soybean burn down is going to be done in April and May. And my gosh, there was somebody planting beans yesterday here. So
wow.
Certainly a lot of those burn downs are going out when palmer's up. And been exposing a fair percentage of our palmer population to a quarter pound, a third of a pound of dicamba for well over a decade.
And see, ours would be, in general, of course, there's no absolutes, but in general, ours would be much earlier than that. I would say, and of course, most every acre of production in the Delta down here also gets 2,4-D or dicamba, but I feel like that's more in January, February, into March. Of course, it's all going to vary, and there'll be some years where we definitely have some palmer up, especially those March timings. But I think for the most part, those auxin applications, 2,4-D and dicamba, we're not getting a lot of those on emerge palmer. That's more of where our paraquat treatments that have gotten real popular down here, that's where they come in.
And Jason, you talk about into March, and you might be a week into March on most of those burns down, especially with corn, because we're going to start planting corn the first day of March if we can.
If we can, that's right. So, yeah, hopefully all that's been done previously, and, you know, and almost exclusively with aerial applications too.
So, guys, you know, that are listening, the difference in what Larry is talking about and what we're talking about here is an extra couple months to where those pigweeds can germinate, and you're spraying them with that low rate, right?
Yeah. And low rate, it's not a low rate. It's not like a reduced rate. It's the appropriate rate for a burn down application. It's just lower than what we've grown accustomed to using since the Xtend technology has been commercial.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
So then, Larry, up to, you know, since Xtend, you know, has been available and been used in Tennessee, you know, what's been the progression of events that have led you to where you are now?
Well, that burn down got a little higher rate, half pound, and, you know, right behind the press wheel. So we got away from, you know, a lot of folks would burn down couple weeks ahead of time, and then sometimes they come back with gramoxone. We have a fair amount of gramoxone used that would clean up some of those pigweed escapes that might have got past dicamba, but certainly not every time. But now with the new system, a lot less gramoxone is being used, and we're going with Roundup and dicamba. They're about when the planter runs through the field, putting even more pressure on dicamba in that, you know, right at planting window.
So, we do some of that, and I don't feel like we do a tremendous amount of, you know, using that as basically a pre, and it's just a different, yeah. It's a different culture, man. I mean, it just is, you know, the production system, the cultural practices are just very different, just given the difference in the topography. So, you know, we're a year four of the Xtend system. What do you see in commercial fields in West Tennessee now?
So, like in 2019, got a number of reports of folks not real happy with their pigweed control after multiple applications, and in a couple of cases, multiple applications I'll just define it as a heavy labeled rate of dicamba. So we went out and collected seed from a lot of them and started doing some preliminary screening. And some of them, Jason, you've done enough of this. We'll kill them dead as a hammer in the greenhouse. And we had a number of those that we killed dead as a hammer. You get those every time. But we had some that were clearly living 3 weeks plus after that half pound, and even some escaping with a pound.
And so, Larry, put that in perspective for folks, you know, like an Ingenia rate. What would that be? A pound.
So that would be, a pound would be 24 ounces,
yeah,
essentially, of Ingenia. So or 44 ounces of Xtendimax.
Right, so a 2x rate of what's recommended in the field.
Exactly. We're getting better control at those higher rates, but we're not getting complete control. You know, we're getting 80%, something like that, with those one-pound rates. That really raised an eyebrow. My problem is again, I don't know where I find a susceptible check population in the state, really. And so to do any of this resistance screening, you got to have a susceptible check population. So we scraped up and pulled up some pigweed I sourced, it was over a decade ago, and we compared it to the 2019 population. And it was about 2x more tolerant to dicamba. But I wanted a better susceptible check. So I sent some across the river, and Jason Norsworthy over there and Nilda Burgos both did some screening, found some similar results as I did. And again, they were using a pigweed from that they sourced, I think, Jason, it was like 12 years ago or something. So after that, I thought, well, yeah, I'd like to see something more contemporary. Peter Dautre over at Texas Tech, he screened some for me compared to a couple populations. One I pulled out of Shelby County, just north of y'all, and another just a county just north of it, Tipton County. And he compared it to the population he pulled there near Lubbock, Texas. And just to kind of give you a long story short, 22 ounces of Xtendimax 3 weeks after application in a greenhouse where it should work great. He had 40% control of that Shelby County location. He had over 90% control with his Texas population. And so that's more of a contemporary site. And then we start getting into this year. So I went to these sites and started doing replicated trials on them, and I was finding the same thing we were finding in the greenhouse, where that 12.8 ounces of Ingenia or 22 ounces of Xtendimax, I was getting, you know, 50% control, certainly no better than 65% control. Follow-up applications, we were getting better control, but still it was 70 to 80% in some of these locations. And I don't remember, you know, Jason, I feel like I should have been getting 90 plus by that point.
So. Yeah, you know, and of course you rewind, 12 plus years ago to the early days of Roundup resistance, and it was less than 95% is a disaster. That's what we all talked about back then. So, even 80% being better than, 50 or 55, it's kind of just academic at that point.
All right, guys. So I got a question that may be completely off base with this, but even if we do lose this technology with, court cases and all that stuff, this has huge bearing on agriculture in general and how we do simply because of those burn down applications, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Of course, it's different for us than it is for Larry, just because of what we mentioned earlier, the difference in the cultural practices. I mean, they're limited. If you're talking about tillage,
they don't have cold steel.
Yeah, they are obviously limited in what's available to them just simply because of the area that they're farming. And I'm talking like I know that. Larry's here on the phone. So, all right, Larry. So you've got these populations, and you're seeing them again in your plots in 2020. And so then, what was your next step?
Well, the next thing was the phone calls from the farmers. I mean, like I do, we could do stuff in the greenhouse and replicated tests, but it's really a concern when farmers start having issues. And I got numerous calls with farmers spraying the same pigweed three times, four times. Now, it wasn't always dicamba every time. They were mixing Liberty in as well, but by the time they could get back, they'd spray a shot of dicamba, and, they'd been used to getting pretty doggone good control. And so they might have a scout look at it and tell them, you need to get back here and spray it again. And by the time they get back there, 3 weeks later, well, this Palmer's getting its feet back under about 10 days and starting to do that, what Palmer does, an inch and a half, 2 inches a day growth again. So when they're 3 weeks after that first application spraying again,
you're basically back to square one.
Yeah. So I got a number of growers that got $60, $70 worth of just post-applications on their cotton or soybeans trying to kill the same pigweed.
So, Larry, in the world that you're living in these fields where, the auxin technologies are failing for you, what are you trying to salvage these fields with? What are you recommending to your growers?
Well, I've been recommending Liberty. Now, some of them... if they got their feet back under them really well, like some of those did, I really think another dicamba application and try and lay them down and then get on them quick. Stop them while they're down with Liberty within 7 days. Wait past that is just not working. So that's kind of what I'm at. The other thing that's really a concern is it seems to be linked to 2,4-D tolerance too. So, and that's the way it was at K-State, and it certainly seems preliminary stuff we have now would say it as well, that where I was getting 50-60% control with the half pound of dicamba, that's all I'm getting with a quart of Enlist One. That technology, my recommendation from it has no business going out ever again with Roundup. It needs to be tank mixed with Liberty every single time. Try and protect both those from resistance on Palmer going forward.
Now say that again real clear, just so people, you don't want to see Enlist go out with Roundup. It needs to go out with Liberty.
It needs to go out with Liberty. That tank mixed with Liberty, a quart of Roundup and a quart of Enlist One is the only thing in my test plots that I will give me 100% control of Palmer Amaranth.
Wait, Larry, you said a quart of Roundup and a quart of Enlist One. I think you meant a quart of Liberty and a quart of Enlist One.
Yeah.
So then what do you do for 2021, Larry? I mean, what are you telling folks? I mean, I know it's July, or right in the middle of 2020. But what are you, if you had to put a crop in today for next year, what would you do?
Well, we've got to start loading up on pre's that are effective on pigweed again. We've kind of gotten away from that with Roundup and dicamba being so effective. Trying to load up on pre's, trying to keep the population down that way. If you're going out with an Enlist crop, then that application for pigweed needs to be a tank mix of Enlist One plus Liberty. Go after your grass after that with Roundup or Clethodim, but attack it with, don't just attack it with 2,4-D and Roundup, because we're just, it's just not going to be as consistently controlling it in our research as if you tank mix it with Liberty. In Extend crops, it's going to be come back as quick as you can with a Liberty application after that dicamba application to take out those escapes. Those are going to be kind of the big keys as we go forward with these. The other thing is we're really on the infancy of this thing. It's not widespread by any means, but you know, grasses are by far and away still our number one problem: jungle grass, barnyard grass, goose grass. But this, I think, Palmer could take over again as our number one weed in short order if this keeps expanding.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't very widespread in, you know, 2006, 2007. You know, depending on what state you were in, you know, with glyphosate resistance. But you know, we went from 0 to 100%. You know, basically overnight, or what felt like overnight at the time. What opportunities do guys in your geography have post-harvest, Larry? You know, for example, down here, particularly with corn, if we're able to get our crop in when we want to, you know, we may have, you know, in some cases 3 months to go between harvest and frost. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. It allows us to control some populations, you know, and maybe manage some seed bank in really extreme fields, you know, that require that. We can't do it on every acre, can't afford to, you know, and then less so on the soybeans. And of course, you know, the question always comes up for us about fall applications, and there's just nothing you can do in the fall that's going to influence a Palmer population or any summer annual weed population, in my opinion, you know, the following year. But with your topography up there, what opportunities do guys have for managing populations after they harvest?
Well, you know, a couple of them would be mowing. We have done some work with, you know, tramoxone after the corn harvest is over. All that's helped a good bit on reducing that seed bank. And I think those are things we really need to start looking at, because we're on the raggedy edge of herbicides that are going to affect manage Palmer now. I don't know if you saw that article from Tom Barber in Arkansas, but now they got some concerns about Liberty.
I did see that.
On Palmer. So you couple that with what we're seeing on my side of the river, we don't have a lot of avenues. So I think cover crops, we need to look at them. And in cotton, I've been pleading with people to get the hoods back out. Golly, Paraquat Valor under a hood is money on pigweed. You know, Direct MSMA is pretty cheap. Direct that underneath the row. Getting those back in play. I know they're slow. I know they're cumbersome, but we've got to get more diversity in our weed management.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that here as well. Yeah, I personally like to think we still use a lot of residual herbicides at planting, but you know, I also know that we're not using them like we were 5 years ago pre Extend and Enlist. We still certainly recommend it and advocate for it, but it's not, you know, it's not as widespread as what we would like or what it once was. How, just a guess, what percent of acres in your area get planted to a cover crop with the intentions of supplementing their weed management?
We actually get a fair amount, maybe 20-25%.
Okay,
a lot of
wow.
It's on with an airplane.
I wouldn't say that's a fair amount. I say that's a huge amount.
Yeah, that's.
This last year wasn't so good because the fall wasn't very good for it. But and you know, one of the calls I get every year is my defoliant. Is that going to hurt my cover crop? I just sowed it in this cotton, the standing cotton. So there's a fair amount of it done. And it does have some value some years. If you get good growth, and, you know, we've got a good bit of research. Well, Garrett did some of it. He cut down how many pigweed you even got to fool with a post-herbicide application by 50%.
Yeah.
Get a good pre in there, it's even more. So.
And what particular cover crop mix was that, just to remind these guys?
So we looked at a lot, but grass, legume, and primarily what I settled on is a vetch with a wheat or a cereal rye. I'm more settled on wheat because everybody's got a little bit of that in the bin. Rye can be hard to get hold of, and it's not that big a difference. Rye's a little better. But
well, and you could take wheat to harvest if you needed to.
You could. That's true. Yeah, and there's, yeah, some people just, yeah, I'm just going to fertilize and keep going with it. And, you know, like this year when the price bounced up pretty good on it, we had some cover crop that was wheat that went to harvest. So $6 wheat will do that. But we do have some of that going on. Then the NRCS blends, you see some of those going out, and they're they're a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and not enough of anything I think we really need for good weed control.
Well, Larry, you got your hands full, man. You know, I don't wish that on you. You know, we appreciate what you're doing up there, and you know, we always appreciate you taking our calls and then letting me bounce stuff off of you just on a personal level too, because man, I run into stuff all the time that I don't have answers for, and I always value bouncing ideas off other folks. So, but we're gonna jump off. We certainly appreciate you taking time out of your morning. Bobby, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
I just say it's been a long time coming, and Larry, we got to do this more often, because everything you put up on Twitter, you know, we hear it a lot down here. Hey, did you see what Larry put up the other day? Is that going on in Mississippi? So
yeah, tell us what your Twitter handle is, Larry, and then also your Tennessee blog as well, so folks will know.
So yeah, I'm UT weed guy, as opposed to Scott Stewart's UT bug guy.
But he's the boss now, right? You're going to get a new bug guy.
He is the boss. We are in search of a new bug guy. That's right, or gal, I guess, whoever we get. But yeah, they're starting that process. So that's right, Bobby. That's right. So it's UT Crops News is our blog site. We put a lot of stuff on there too. So I try and tip my hand on this pigweed and the problems we were having before we said anything official, but it was just building up to it. You know, when you get a lot of these calls in these fields.
All right, man. Well, Larry, we hope you have a good day, and thank you for spending some time with us.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Bobby.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.